This is Jeff Carmack reporting on arts and cultural heritage for KVSC News. And in today's news feature, we're going to take a look at some historic homes around St. Cloud State University. As everyone knows, St. Cloud State has been around for a very long time. And as the university grows, there are often growing pains and difficult decisions to be made concerning existing buildings that are in the path of expansion. Luckily, the St. Cloud State University administration will often look at these concerns and figure out innovative approaches to both serve form and function when it comes to preserving this aspect of our cultural heritage. While certain newer buildings like Stuart Hall and the Atwood Memorial Center embrace the largeness and complexity of St. Cloud State University, there are other buildings which house academic departments that the casual wanderer through St. Cloud State University may have missed. Today we're going to visit some of these homes that have been repurposed for academic functions. We'll also visit with some actual homeowners that are restoring some of these old homes, as well as just simply living in them, sometimes for as long as they can remember. We'll start off with the Brower House, which is located right next door to the Newman Center. It's a house which is owned by the St. Cloud Diocese, and is primarily used these days for meetings, as well as a place to stay when guests come into town. It is a house that I have walked, biked, and driven by many times, and you probably have too. But as I wandered through the historic home tour and came upon the Brower House, it became very obvious very quickly what a special place it was.
Where are we? What is this house? It's right along the banks here at St. Cloud State. So,
Well, this is called the Brower Home. It was built in 1924 for $12,000. It's a beautiful Tudor style, very original Tudor style inside and out.
It reminds me of the days of Robin Hood with the front doors, castle effect.
Yeah, it does look kind of castle-like. It's just off the street, just a little bit lower down, kind of like it's on the bank. Well, it is on the bank of the river, it's very unique. I don't think I've been in a house like this anywhere else in St. Cloud, really.
Really, it's very unique, and it has a very open feel on the main level and upstairs as well. The flooring in the main level is mostly slate. There's a huge dining area with a huge dining table that is original furniture. The kitchen, which is quite small, but is very useful, and it's been remodeled. It's more modern.
And y'all said that nobody lives here anymore. Well, who owns the house now, and what do they do with it?
It is owned by the Diocese of St. Cloud. It was purchased in 1964 and has been used as a guest house or a staff house for meetings.
Overnight guests.
Mm-hmm. Some of the bedrooms upstairs have been remodeled into suites for guests. It's very open feel up there with views of the river from the bedrooms.
And the sunroom used to be all open, and they enclosed it with the screens and sliding windows.
Wow.
And the floor slants a little before it was enclosed so the water could run off down to the river.
Mm.
And they have a gazebo in the back, which is nice. You can go out through the porch.
Nice. Well, I think thank you guys both for for chatting about this.
Yeah. Upon leaving the Brower House, wandered around the yard a little bit and took some photos, which will be available at kvsc.org as part of the podcast for this story. My next destination was the Whitney House, located very near to Kelly Hall as well as the Atwood Memorial Center. And it was here that I ran into some very interesting history about the women of St. Cloud.
I'm Marilyn Obermiller, and I've been president for the past 2 years.
And I'm Karen Van, and I've been a member for about 15 years. Also a past president, but many years ago.
And a very able treasurer, keeps track of all of our books.
That could be hard to do
sometimes. That is hard to do. Yes, it is.
And the St. Cloud Reading Room Society, how long has this been around? And
we are celebrating our 130-year anniversary this year. And therefore, that's why we have published a book of our whole history. But in actuality, the Reading Room women started and first met in 1867. There were seven of them. And they met with the express purpose of not wanting St. Cloud to be another Wild River town. And they wanted people to be able to read, and they really pushed literacy. And therefore, that was their goal. But they also did lots of other things. Karen can remember some of those.
They would take on the butcher shops in town because they thought they were too filthy. They established the first parks here in St. Cloud. Mm-hmm. Their actions led to abolishing of spitting on the streets. These women were indomitable. They would not take no for an answer.
And so many of them came from the East Coast because their husbands came here for business or to establish their business in lumber, railroad, all of the kinds of things. And a lot of them were college educated, which was quite unusual for the beginning days of a new state. And they brought a lot of those East Coast habits of how you do things in a community with them, and they wanted to establish some of those. So they came with an education in how to do things in the community that was ahead of a lot of places. And Alice Whitney was one of those. Her sister at the time, I think the reason she came here, her sister was one of the first teachers at St. Cloud State. And then met her husband while she was here.
Wow.
Yeah.
There you go.
No, it's like you have to make your own community, and that's what it appears that these ladies did.
They did. They really did. And she was one of our foremost. She was one of the first ones, wasn't she?
She was. And the thing that literacy was so important that even this group of seven women in 1867 established a reading room.
That's where the name comes from.
That's where the name
comes from. It's not a book club.
Where people could come and borrow books or just sit and read. Because there were not a lot of books in the community at that time, or even things to read besides books.
No, there weren't.
And what's interesting to me and what's been fun for me to follow is the history of how these women are responsible for the first Carnegie Library here in town. And they wanted a library, and they knew Carnegie would give them the money if they jumped through all the right hoops. And so they appealed to him for the funds to start this building, and he would not listen to them because they were women. He would not take anything except if it was signed by a man. So they got their husbands to sign the letter of request. But he then said, well, he never built a building unless there was land. So these women raised $5,000 in 1899 to purchase the original site of the Carnegie Library, where the Wells Fargo Bank now sits downtown. So $5,000 at that time was not a big sale.
Not a pittance. Yeah.
And then this group was instrumental for how long did they fight for bonding for the library?
15 years for the second library
was demolished. They fought for the bonding of the new library, and we've been instrumental in contributing to the current new building. So this is deep in our history.
Deep in our history. I think it's interesting to note, Karen was saying that they worked 15 years for the bonding of this one that's now where the new Civic Center building is. And when that was being demolished, some of the older members in their late 80s and 90s came down and watched that being demolished because that meant so much to them. And one of them walked up to the foreman and said, can I have some of those bricks? And he was very kind, and he said, I'll see what I can do. And he said, about how many? And she said, 50. And he did. He picked 50 of the nicest ones, and then he was nice enough to deliver them to we had to put them somewhere, so he put them in the basement of the new library. And then we thought, what do we do with them? Because she thought they were going to be brick size. No, no, no. They were 8 by 3 inches thick, glazed and heavy.
Yeah.
And so we've now worked with the city of St. Cloud and with Lyle Mathiason at the new Civic Building, and they are going to try to incorporate those 50 bricks into something outside the entryway of the new Civic Center to denote that at one time this other library stood on that site. And that made the older members feel a little better.
Well, yeah, there's that kind of evolution as, you know, time goes on. And yeah, I where I grew up, we had an old Carnegie Library as well, and it's neat, but at the same time, it grows and
no longer fits the needs.
Yeah, and now we've got this huge library that's, you know, part of the Great River Library system, and it's just, it's pretty cool.
And we've contributed money to this one, and if you go up and get off the elevator on the second floor, the first thing you see is the glassed-in reading room.
Oh.
We have a new project, though. I think it's kind of interesting listening to what Karen was saying about their wonderful, wonderful focus on literacy and people not having books at that time. So they provided a place with books for people to read. Our latest project the last 3 years in Reading Room has been what a project we call No Worry Books, because one of our members noticed that there are an awful lot of children in schools and all over that do not have books at home. And when asked why, a lot of them said, oh, they get torn or they get thrown away or whatever. So we, in other words, it doesn't pay to take a book home from the library because we might not be able to return it. We've been collecting used, gently used books at garage sales and all over.
Children's books.
Children's books. And we sort them according to age. And this year we've managed to collect last 3 years, 30,000 books. We take them to homeless shelters, Anna Marie's, Clara's house, the schools for anybody that doesn't have any book. And we tell the kids, this is your book to take home. You do not have to worry. It's your book. You don't have to bring it back.
Nice.
And it's turned into a wonderful project. And it seems like it's the whole circle coming full circle, providing literacy and books to people who don't have it.
Yeah, it's just evolving with the times.
It
yeah,
truly is.
Still the same thing, but just a little
is.
Different.
Yes, yes.
And it's an exciting new focus for us as we move into this century. You know, looking ahead.
Right on.
Well, it's the home means so much to us because of the history. But it's real difficult to come in and see offices and things. We know things change, and you know that's inevitable. But you can't help but try to imagine the grandeur of those early days and the things that took place and the people who came through those doors. Really interesting. And I guess we should just be happy this building is still here.
Yeah, that's kind of what it boils down to.
It really does, doesn't it? Don't you sometimes wonder when you go into a city or a town, some of them really value their old buildings and have kept them and done wonderful things with them, and you just love seeing them. And other places, it's just, oh, no use, tear it down, put up another square building. I don't know.
This association, St. Cloud Historic and Neighborhood Preservation Association, has really done a lot of work preserving the homes in this area. I'm very impressed with what they're doing. But as I sit here, I keep wondering what it would be like if that building behind us weren't there. Would we have a gorgeous view of the river?
I bet we would.
I bet they did.
Well, you can just look at this space that we're sitting in right now. We're kind of at the, you know, so almost at the top of the stairs, the landing here. These windows, tall windows, and
you walk up and immediately the vista is wonderful.
If Kelly Hall wasn't there, you just look right out onto the
not
river.
Not only that, but the craftsmanship that went into building these buildings originally must have been wonderful, because look at the stair rail. So many things must have been done so well. They're still here.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, you can smell it, too. You get into some of the hallways back there, you go upstairs, and it's just, it reminds me of, I don't know, visiting my grandfather's house. Yeah.
It does. It truly does.
I guess I was just stunned by the craftsmanship of the crown molding and the woodwork and that those downstairs rooms. They're just phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
Nice. Well, thank you both for speaking with me today.
It was nice to talk to you.
Thanks for stopping.
Yes. Always happy to tell you about the history because it's really quite interesting.
Yeah. You're in tune to 88.1 FM KVSC, and this is a news feature about the historic homes around St. Cloud State University. And our next destination is the Lewis House, which is home to St. Cloud State's alumni relations.
My name is Carla Lund, and I'm an office manager here with the SCSU Foundation. And I've been with St. Cloud State University for approximately 40 years. And 15 of those years have been here at the Alumni House, working exclusively for the foundation. And I also work with alumni relations a little bit. They're a part of our home, so we both have, there's both the foundation and alumni relations that are located in this home.
And, well, this home, it was originally built by the brother of Sinclair Lewis.
That's correct, by Claude and Mary Lewis.
And how were they associated with the university at some point?
I don't know that they were associated with the university. I know this home was built in the early 20s for around $30,000, which was considered to be a very expensive home in those days. And to my knowledge, they were not associated with the university at all. How the home became a part of the university is when Mrs. Atwood purchased the home from the Lewis family. And at that point, she lived in the home for several years while she was affiliated with the university, I believe teaching, and then was forced to sell the home back to the university because the university in the 70s was growing so quickly that they needed additional space. And because of the history of the home and Sinclair Lewis being a brother to Claude and Claude Lewis, the history has helped keep the home in the university's, should we say, portfolio of land or whatever you want to call it, I guess.
Yeah, they didn't repurpose this land for another building.
No, they didn't. They preserved it. Then, so then once they purchased the home from Mrs. Atwood, the home at that point became a guest house for alumni or other donors or other guests to the university, so that we had 5 guest bedrooms upstairs. So before that occurred, though, there was a certain amount of remodeling done, and an interior decorator, I believe, was hired to redo each of the various rooms. And so when the home was finished by this interior decorator, it was opened up for guests to stay here overnight for $5 a night. And then the alumni relations was located here in first floor, so their offices were located here as well. But I don't know anything more about it after that. Of course, then what happened was the SCSU Foundation was located in another building, and because it was outgrowing by leaps and bounds, and we're adding new staff, the foundation moved over to this building and has actually been growing ever since. You know, we started out maybe with 2 staff members in the foundation, and now we have about 18 staff members.
And you were telling me there's kind of a different feel coming into this house rather than coming into, say, an office space.
Yes, there is. I think I have worked in various other buildings, not only here at St. Cloud State, but at another campus. And it was a more contemporary, sterile feeling of being in an office setting, whereas coming here has always been a very pleasant experience. It's just like coming to another home. You just feel a different warmth of the surroundings by having older furniture. We used to have a dining room set in one of the other rooms. We've got the fireplace here. So you just have a different, warmer feeling, and I think the staff kind of play off of that a little bit. I think we're a very cohesive group of people who work together well, and I think a little bit of the house presents itself to people having a little different attitude in the building here.
It definitely does kind of feel like that. It's so there's a meeting going on behind us just briefly. That it's like sitting around a dining room table.
Right. You feel like you, even when guests come here to the building, I really feel open to giving them tours of the building, and so do others. We just have a little bit warmer feel of, yeah, come on in. Let's find out what it's like in here, and would you like a cup of coffee? If we have coffee, or if we got cookies available, come on in and join us, and let's just sit down and have a chat. You know,
it is. There's something to be said about that. Just it's much more comfortable,
right? And I've always felt that way. I've been in this building. I've worked in this building for 15 years, and I've always had that. It's just a little kind of an inner feeling of coming back home again.
Not all of the homes on the historic home tour have been renovated and repurposed for academic endeavors. Many are still lived in, and some are in the process of being renovated so that they can once more be lived in. Next, we'll talk with Steve Rupar, who, with the help of his wife and some neighbors, are restoring one of the historic homes so that they may indeed live there.
My name is Steve Rupar, and we are in the, 324 3rd Avenue South. It was originally built by a widow, Mrs. McDonald, and it's the McDonald House, I guess. Mm-hmm. Soon to be the Rupar House.
So what led you guys to want to buy this house, I guess?
What originally got me started on this, my wife and I had originally remodeled a small house in Stock Rapids, and did that, and so I said no more remodeling. I'm going to build a brand new house and be done. But the new houses, they're all cookie cutter. Everybody's has to have the new house. They're all the same, and the older houses really have the character. Each one's unique. I think that they're better built. They're just stronger, better materials all around. And my father-in-law is good friends with the Craigles, and I helped my father-in-law remodel another house in this neighborhood, and so I got bit by the bug again. There's a lot of, I'm meeting the people that are involved with this, the neighborhood, the historic district, and there's so much energy, and just enthusiasm about these old houses, and especially like today with the tour, all the people that are coming through, it's just a lot of positiveness that just really, wants to get me going to get this, ready for next year to have everybody come back through. So it's great. It's a good neighborhood. A lot of younger families moving in. I've got younger kids, I got kids to play with. We're close to downtown. We're close to, the schools, and, 23, 94, 15, it's all close. It's a good area. It's a good area. Lake George right down the road. You got that. So.
Yeah. Well, it's good to hear that there's lots of positive energy about.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and this is, the house, it needs some, it needs some updates. We're going to, fortunate enough, we're going to do the updates, and, through the Southside Historic District, through the HRA, they got a really good loan program, the 30-year no interest deferred loan for $25,000, which is huge for to help towards repairs, and that's going to wipe out most of our the big ticket items, and I'm trying to do as much work as I can. Some of the stuff I'll obviously hire out for just to kind of keep the time frame, kind of tight. When this house was first built, I mean, the plumbing that they put in, the electrical they put in, that was state of the art. So for, for 100 years, it's done its job. And so, now we've got an opportunity to upgrade and, put it into the future another 100 years and let some other ambitious individual tear into it again.
Yeah. Some other ambitious individual get talked into this by their wife. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Exactly.
I definitely recommend this to anybody that's got some energy to burn and likes the history of the area. I mean, real willing to welcome, anybody and everybody into the neighborhood. And from what I've learned through this whole process, definitely willing to share. I mean, there's lots of people that I've even met today that, that have, done the same or similar, project as this, that is, that's willing to share and give ideas. And that's, the whole thing about being neighborly in the community and all that. So it's nice to get back to get the core neighborhoods, get them revitalized and bring them back. A lot of the bigger cities are doing it. Minneapolis and St. Paul, they've got some very vibrant core communities that are really coming back, and that's good. That's good.
And finally today, we'll end up talking with Rich Kelly, who's been a part of this community for a very, very long time and whose home was open for the end of the home tour.
Can you tell me who you are and, what do we got going on here?
My name is Rich Kelly, and I went to St. Cloud State in my undergrad and my grad school, and I came and bought a house here. And this is the house I used to party in, actually, as a matter of fact. Not that people do, but, And I remember sitting by the by the fireplace thinking, boy, this place isn't trashed out. It's so neat. And, you know, anyway, that was years ago. Now, 20 years later, I'm living here and I'm in the neighborhood group. And we do this neighborhood home tour. This is the 13th one we've done. And just, you know, to a good PR for the neighborhood. And we're really trying to...
Thanks, Rich.
You're welcome. Good to see you. See you next year. And we, you know, to try to get money for the neighborhood, PR for the neighborhood, just show off the neighborhood. And we've raised money for the new playground equipment at the park, street signs, just all kinds of stuff like that. So it's just, you know, just kind of a fun day in the neighborhood. Yeah. In the 80s, there was a big, when I was in school here, there was a big change of homes getting torn down and new apartments. And that's kind of leveled off. So that's been it. But this house, my mom here lived in this house in the 50s with the family at the time when girls had to live with the family in the house and guys could live out in a house without a family living in it. And so this house, when I bought it, was licensed for 36 students. And now there's, I have this floor and they have people in the basement and the two floors up. So I have renters, but not 36. But that's like when I was here in the 80s, people triple roomed, which I don't think they quite do the same now, at least.
Yeah,
and so I did that. And when she came in the 57 to live here, she had a double room and you shared a double bed. She had a girl from the Iron Range and two, they shared a room, but they provided one bed. So it's funny, you went with a stranger and slept in the same bed. And that was just the way you did in the 50s. You know, which I'm like, you wouldn't get a...
Back
in
the day.
Yeah, yeah. So that was that. And but yeah, this house was more divided up, but I still it was you know, built as a single family home, but I still use it as my home in a rental, and that's a way to do it with a lot of these big houses, whether you know it's all rental or else live in it and you can rent out units. And part of the thing, and I'm also on the Alumni Association board, and really things are different between St. Cloud State, the university, the neighborhood, all that stuff. Dr. Potter has been great, and really, it's been a change. And if you notice, this year on the tour, we had a couple houses on. We had the new Welcome Center, which is nice because I'm glad to get 300-400 people in that came on the tour today could come in and see the center that might not go in there, or the Alumni House and the Whitney House. It'd be nice if the Whitney House was getting fixed up now or something. And so that's a whole different thing. And just the way the university relates and the neighborhood relates with the university and the city, and that's great. And that's part of all of this. And with the Alumni Association, we want... You know, we want these interconnections in a positive way that hasn't been there really before for a long time or whatnot. But it's different. And just same thing when I listen to Dr. Potter talk about the restructuring of the university. I believe him. There's like a vision there. And I know from his work with the neighborhood and the city that there's part of that. So it's all interconnected. It's all connected.
Yeah, that's a good point. This is more than just, well, college towns, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. There's a big transitory population. Mm-hmm. The students are here for a few years and they go.
Yeah.
But not all of them. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, you look in the house now. There's myself. I was an undergrad and a grad student here. We've got administration from the university right there. There's Lauren. And we've got people who've gone. Hello. We've got people who've gone to the university. What? There's got current
the
students coming through.
All set for us.
Oh, yes, I've seen.
Lovely.
So it's just great to have people in the neighborhood. And you had a nice day walking through the neighborhood, ladies?
Could not be more perfect.
Isn't that great? Yeah, yes. I just love to see smiling faces walking through the neighborhood.
I've got my fourth year, and this is the best.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So really, it's just it's a win-win for everyone to have folks in the neighborhood have a nice event like this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. Everybody's walking around. Everybody's walking around and just it's there are places I work on campus, of course. I bike to campus all the time, and there are these places that I bike past almost every day, and it's just like, well, what is this, you know?
And that's part of it too, because either people lived in this house, like I said, my mom was a student living in this house in the 50s, and I remember being in houses and having friends in this house and other houses on the tour. Or you had your philosophy professor in Whitney House, but now you didn't get to see the attic and the basement and the office and so and the Alumni House. You know, people don't just wander in that much, so it's a good excuse to get people into the neighborhood and into the new Welcome Center and into just the homes and see it in that kind of light, you know, and having everybody working together. So that's the whole reason. And we started this 13 years ago, and I was on the first committee, and it's for a fundraiser, but that was not the prime goal ever. It was just to have a good day in the neighborhood and good PR for the neighborhood and just show off the neighborhood. And the university is part of that, and the city is part of that, and the neighborhood groups are part of that, and the businesses are part of that. So it's just amazing how this goes.
Yeah, it's building community.
It is. And last year, for example, the Gardens on State were on, and this year we tried to change things up. But yeah, there's these community building things, so that's really the goal of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
to speak.
So, Rich, what year is this? About 1900, 1910, this one. And the records may not be that old.
And this concludes our tour of the St. Cloud State Area neighborhood, where we visited a number of historic homes. Some of these homes are open to the public due to the fact that they are SCSU offices, and you can visit them. More information on those can be found online on the St. Cloud State University website, which is www.stcloudstate.edu. And plus, more information can be found on our website at kvsc.org. This has been Jeff Carmack reporting on Arts and Cultural Heritage for KVSC. And this report was made possible through funding through the Minnesota Historical and Cultural Legacy Grant. It's been produced by KVSC, a proud member of AMPERS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's Communities.